from the twisted realm of science and the darkest pits of reason comes chilling tales of godlessness. Bear witness to the unfathomable terror that is the Good Atheist.
Welcome to the GoodAtheist.net podcast. My name is Jacob Forjan.
And I'm Ryan Harkness.
Today on the show, we're actually going to be talking about some of the future plans that I have, specifically the book, as many of you have heard me talk about. I'm going to mention what is the plan with that, and even hint at possibly the idea of saving Good Atheist. I say possibly. I don't want to fucking guarantee anything, because as you'll hear, it will not be an easy task, but it is doable, and I'm going to put it out there. But before we start the show, I thought we would...
Well, we're going to talk about some other stuff too, right?
Well, we'll be talking about all the different types of... preliminary research that I've been doing, stories about the Bible that are just can't make it into the book that I'm going to be just mentioning on the radio shows up until the show is essentially recorded.
So the show won't be completely meta. We will be talking some atheism.
Really, actually, the Good Atheist, as it goes forward, will be almost entirely devoted and concentrated on the book itself. So much of the subject matter will be the things that I'm studying. Either it'll range anywhere from, say, we could be talking about Henry VIII, one podcast, or today's podcast, we'll actually be talking about Cain and his wife, and we'll also be talking about ancient flood stories, because I'm writing that part of the book right now, so that's what's in my head.
Cool.
But before we start the show, I did want to mention a little bit of cool news, I suppose. I don't know if it's news. But Carissa, as some of you may know, one of our co-hosts and my fiance, likes to take pictures of herself, a lot of pictures. And some of these pictures are nudies. You're naked in this picture.
Wait, are they dirties or nudies? What'd you call them?
Nudies.
Nudies.
I didn't
okay.
say dirties.
Okay.
I don't know what degree I just wanted of dirtiness to, I guess.
Yeah, if you were going to call the dirties, I'm like, that's the kind of weird sure. thing like Kathy Bates would say. Or what was the name of that chick from Misery? You're dirty, do dirty, dicky stuff. And just smash your knees in with some sledgehammers.
It wasn't the knees. It was the ankles. Mm. I remember that scene. It freaked me out.
Well, I think in the book there was a difference. Because in the movie, she hobbles him with a sledgehammer. But in the book, I think she actually goes full axe.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Like cuts off his legs?
Yeah.
Wow. I guess they couldn't really do that for the movie.
I thought the sledgehammer thing was just as effective, if not more so.
Oh, well, just that scene where they show both of those legs being cracked in that just horrible position. After the first one, you're like, no more. I don't ever want to see that again.
Oh, when Stephen King movies were good. Well, actually, that's not
true. That wasn't a good movie.
Where three or four good Stephen King movies were made, and that was one of them. You're crazy if you don't think it was good.
I think it was okay.
She runs over a state trooper with a lawnmower.
I know, yeah.
Lots of great moments.
But I guess for me, it's just like, I couldn't buy her as a villain. I'm like, fat old lady that comes after me, I'm going to just knock the shit out of her.
And if you lived in the South, this is another thing. It's like you'll never understand. You live in the South, you understand true religious persecution, or rather anti-religious, as an atheistic persecution towards atheists, and you'll understand that the people that you really want to be afraid of is the crazy fat bitches.
That's true. That's true. They, but I, not for the reasons that they will run you over the lawnmower.
Just they could.
Like they will make your life a living hell.
This dude killed two people because his big fat daughter was unfriended by them on Facebook. He went and shot them in the face.
Are you going to find me some weird example and then suddenly say, this happens a lot?
Just watch it. Just watch out. If you're right now listening to the show and you're sitting next to a fat chick, watch out.
She might just kill you. Great. Well, anybody who's on a bus listening to this, who's sitting probably beside quite a few fat chicks on the bus, be afraid. Be very afraid, because Ryan said that a guy shot a fat chick's friends in the face.
Sorry, it's just a bit of a side thing. So getting back to these dirty dude...
The dirty little pictures. They're just nakies.
Dirty
right?
birdie. That's what she dirty called birdie. Them. Dirty birdie pictures.
Okay, well, back to the dirty birdie pictures. There was a picture that she took... a couple, like maybe a year ago, and it was her holding an open book of Christopher Hitchens and basically throwing away the Bible in the photo. And it looked kind of like Norman Rockwell painting after she had done some cool stuff with Photoshop.
Straight up 50s pinup style.
Yeah, exactly, pinup style. So the picture gets picked up by someone on Reddit, and it makes like the front page of the site. And what I wanted to talk about was a little some of the comments. Now, if some of you have a long-term memory, you'll remember a little while ago there was a 15-year-old girl who posted a photo of her with some book. And then all of a sudden, the lewd comments that the internet unleashed on her was picked up by Rebecca Watson of Skeptic, and just she made a big deal out of it, saying that Reddit is full of misogynists and so on and so forth. But what I found was really funny was when Carissa put up her photo, most of the comments that you could say were sexist were basically women who were complaining, saying, "I can't believe she's doing this. This is debasing all women to be naked." Not understanding, of course, that the photo itself says reason is sexy. It has the word sex in it, but somehow, I guess it's frightening whenever someone who other people desire is starting to flaunt that around for their own advantages. It makes certain people uncomfortable, and the reaction is typically fairly predictable of just saying, everyone but me has a correct interpretation of the world.
So female Reddit people were basically saying that she should be ashamed for appearing like this because it debases women.
That is correct.
Yeah. You know, it's really interesting because it draws a certain parallel to situations in the Middle East where if you're a woman and you don't conform to the way that society tells you you need to dress, then you're just a slut.
You're a fucking whore.
Yeah. And I always find it interesting because to a certain degree, the same thing happens over here. You look at, Miley Cyrus goes out wearing some fishnet stockings. She's a whore. She's a slut. She's dressing like a harlot. She's evil and stupid. And I consider that to be the exact same thing as what's going on in the Middle East. You know, obviously, religion is tied up into it in the Middle East, but I think it's a general thing that we as human beings do. And I think it's actually worse than your garden variety, whatever kind of sexism, some vague sexism that comes out of the fact that we like looking at pictures of naked women from time to time. I think slut shaming, or the attempted slut shaming of anybody who does something like this, is actually much worse.
All right, but let me ask you a controversial question, okay? Now, we do admit, here's what's controversial about it. Now, you probably, I don't know if you remember, there was a really interesting documentary I think I made you watch, about the gay scene in the 1980s and the 1990s, where there were a few people that were themselves homosexuals within the scene that were trying to encourage men, gay men, to just put on condoms and to slack off on all the fucking crazy amount of,
unprotected sex.
Unprotected sex that they were having, right? And it kind of made the point, and I think it's still correct, that for the most part, men are always about yes. And women are the ones that mostly say no. Now, let me ask you this question. Is that partially because of slut shaming? Does slut shaming kind of rein in the sexual mores and make it more stable?
I'm not sure, but it's interesting because going back to kind of Middle Eastern perceptions of women, there's something, I can't remember if it's in the Quran or if it's in the other book.
The Hadiths, probably.
Yeah, they talk about women being nine tenths of desire is on the woman's side, and men only have one tenth. Now, that seems pretty ridiculous to us, considering the fact that we have the complete opposite view of it, where men are the horn dogs and the women are the one that have to quote unquote protect their virtue and so forth. But that's literally what they think in the Middle East, and that's why women have to be covered up and they have to be kept at home, because they're the ones that are really full of all of that desire, and they're the ones that are going to get crazy. If you give them just an inch, they'll be out there fucking everybody, and then you have to murder them and restore your honor,
and it's such a hassle.
Especially nowadays, where it's all in the news.
Yeah, you can't even get rid of three girls in a car and submerge it underwater in Canada without somebody just going nuts about it.
Yeah, seriously.
Jeez. Back in the old days where you could just bury them all alive and forget about it and say, honor restored. I could just start all over again. Oh, that's terrible. Anyways, that was the bit of news. I thought it was interesting. I don't want to really talk about it too much because I think everybody already knows the fact that I think that accusations of sexism are relatively silly. I think they reflect the fact that people who normally make the accusations of, say, this is sexist or that is sexist, hasn't really understood what sexism is, and really hasn't understood on it in a global scale. I mean, most, I will say probably 80% of the accusations of sexism out there are currently from white women. That's the honest truth. Second wave feminists who have not gone away. And well, and honestly, I'm like, if you take a look at the situation of the way that feminism is evolving, it's not those old conversations. I feel like it's the same old shit that was being rehashed in the 1980s. Nothing has changed.
Well, you know, atheism is an intellectual pursuit. Feminism is an intellectual pursuit. You're going to get a lot of feminists involved with atheism. And when you have a lot of feminists around and something comes up that, you know, fits into their view of the world, they're going to say something about it, and that's all there is really to it. We could disagree. We could agree to disagree. Well, I mean, I can. I don't know if they can.
That's a good question. They might just accuse you of male privilege and then just move on.
Which is probably true. I mean, this is the whole thing. I sit on my throne of male dominance. It's quite comfortable here. I'm not going to deny it's kind
of throne
of
male dominance. You know what, the last time I got accused of that, actually, I think it was 2 days ago by someone who just basically, on one of the older shows or one of the older posts, mentioned that I was some middle-class white man. And I'm like, I wish I was middle class. Let me tell you something. I am not middle class. I may be white, but I am very poor. I have much more in common with an illegal Mexican immigrant than I do with a wasp. You know? Mm-hmm. Not a lot in common. I'm fucking broke here, but I really do love the way that somebody's just going to make the automatic assumption. Oh, you're white? You must be rich. You must be middle class, right? You're white. When you're born, don't they give you $40,000 and a free trip to the moon or something?
Well, you know, statistically, if you're going to take a stab at it.
Sure. Well, it depends on where you live, actually. Because around here in Quebec, if you take a stab at it, you'd be poor.
Sure.
Like, there are certain places where, yeah, just, I mean, go to the States, man. Close your eyes and throw a dart at, like, a big population board. Are you going to hit a rich person? Are you going to even hit a middle-class American? I mean, they're a myth now. They don't exist barely. They're an endangered species, let me tell you what. So the accusation, first of all, of the fact that we have privilege, I'm like, trust me, I don't feel it most days. The privilege? No. But anyways, let's move on. What I want to talk about with you guys is actually, I guess this is my my pitch. I have been thinking about this ever since I declared that Good Atheist was going to have to end in 2012. The reason I mentioned this was because I had to go back to work, and I just, you know, the finances weren't making any more sense. Not enough money to house myself.
You can only bang your head against the wall for so long before you have to say continuing the way that it has been for the past 3 years would be insanity. So something had to give.
Something had to give. Now, the one thing that I have been really, my frame of mind when I decided that I could not continue the podcast was essentially, I guess it was motivated by the fact that I was at the time, I will admit, in a kind of depression. I mean, who's not going to feel depressed when you essentially realize that whatever it is that you were doing that you still enjoyed has to stop? Like, you cannot continue to go on like this. So I think at first I was really, you know, under the cloud of a kind of depression. And more importantly, I had hoped before I quit that maybe I could give it one last shot by trying to write the book, and that the book itself was going to be able to sell enough that I could keep doing it. But guess what? When you're depressed, you can't write. Nothing comes out of you, right? And everything you write, you hate. So I was coming to this, you know, like this realization at the time that I can't even do this book. So naturally, you know, coupled with the fact that I had to move in with my moms, with my fiance in tow, you know, like the humiliation seemed fairly complete. Like, I just didn't know how much more I had in me, how much more I could accept. But there's nothing like hitting rock bottom to make you understand that you're a lot tougher than you think you are, and that once you kind of get over your little pity party, you can look at a situation with a little bit more objectivity, right? And say, maybe this situation isn't all lost, which is why I came up with the plan. Now, if you have not visited the site recently, you don't know what the plan is, so I'm going to let you in on it. What I plan to do is I plan to release pre-sales for the book, Bible Stories, that I'm writing. After the end of this month, I'm hoping by probably mid-March at the latest, I'm going to have a sample chapter and the audiobook version of that sample chapter up as a way to entice people to to pre-order the book. Now, I've calculated that I need roughly one quarter of all the listeners of Good Atheist to pre-order the book in order to make this happen. Otherwise, I still have to get a normal job, and I wouldn't be able to make the deadline work because, you know, working a full-time job plus writing a book, I mean, good luck. You're adding yourself, like, tons of time on that shit, right? Like, I can't realistically do that in a year. But if I can maintain roughly, I calculated about 4 sales a day of pre-sales once this goes up, then Good Atheist doesn't have to end. This doesn't have to be our last year. I can keep doing the podcast, although I won't be doing any more bonus shows. It will basically be a once-a-week podcast. But the podcast will focus on elements in the book. It'll be largely about, you know, some of the history of the Bible or history of ancient civilizations that I'm researching as part of that, because the focus is really 100% on the book now. Like, even one of the things that I'm offering for members, even for freebie members, is you will be able to go to the site and read articles about certain subjects that just can't make it in the book. You know, like those are going to be the subjects that we're going to be talking about in a few minutes. But suffice to say, the plan is this. Pre-sale of the book, you guys buy, show saved. I don't think I can make it simpler than that. And we don't even need that much. Like I said, a quarter of you guys who listen need to pre-order the book. And the pre-order of the book is going to be $10. This is not a huge deal.
And $10, and it comes with the sample chapter plus the audiobook version?
Well, the audiobook, yeah, exactly. The audio sample and the book sample will come with the with that pre-order just immediately, so you get to have like a taste of what of the things to come. And plus, I've also been mulling the idea of including like a couple of packages. You know, there'll obviously be a cheaper version and maybe a deluxe version, because there have been people in the past that have given very generously, and I think they want like kind of like a deluxe pack with like, you know, a physical version of the book, the ebook, the audiobook. Who knows? I'm still in the process of figuring what that out
TBA.
Is.
TBA.
To be announced. The focus is entirely on finishing that first chapter, which is just Genesis. Now, as you guess, Genesis is actually surprisingly long, right? It takes up a pretty significant chunk of the actual Bible.
I always used to get bored of the Bible right around, I'd say, after Exodus. You know,
yeah.
So Genesis and Exodus, I think those are the two books. Like all through the first 3 or 4 chapters, those are the ones that most people have
read.
Yeah. Well, because, you know, everybody at some point in their life picks up the Bible and says, I'm going to read this fucking thing. And after a couple million, Isaiah begat Isaraca, begat Sharia, begat whatever. Begat Rick, begat Brad.
Begat James. Yeah. The begats. Okay, sure, yeah. It gets a little bit boring. Also near Judges, it gets a little bit dry with their bullshit military campaigns. Sure, fine. It's not the most entertaining read. But what I am trying to do with this book, I mean, you were mentioning the begats, right, as a good example. Well, in Genesis, there's a bunch of begats going from Adam all the way to Noah. Because after Seth, there's not a lot. Like, they don't really say much about the guys that follow them, you know. There's... Who cares about Enoch? Who cares about Lamech? Nobody gives a shit about these fucking guys. They're just... All they do is say, he was born, he lived till about this age, and he had this son. So, but the one thing... this is what normally, like, if you read... Okay, who was Lamech, or who were these characters? If you read just the Bible, there's not a lot of interesting stories. But there's a lot of extra biblical material... and that stuff, which isn't really recognized as officially canonical, it's like fan fiction for biblical stuff. Like, here's a good example. This is our first subject. The Book of Jubilees, okay? This is written, I think, in the 1st or 2nd century AD. So, like, hundreds of years after the supposed time where this story of Adam and Eve is written. But
or thousands of years after Adam and Eve were in their garden.
Right, whatever.
Thousands!
Yeah, only thousands, though. So the book itself is kind of describes what happens after Adam and Eve get kicked out of the Garden of Eden. Now, for the most part, you know, like part of, you know, the Book of Jubilees mentions the specifics of who was Cain's wife, who was Seth's wife. Because sometimes that is a question that people ask. They're like, who was his wife? Who did he marry? Who did he have kids with?
So in effect, these are kind of like, you've got the Star Wars movies, yep. And then you've got the novelizations that take you on side treks with some of the lesser known characters.
Exactly. Now, you might know some of this as Apocrypha if you're Protestant. And the Apocrypha is like just a whole bunch of books. Like I said before, they're like fan fiction. And they try to kind of fill in the details, because there's not a lot of details. Here's a good example. In the Bible, Cain seems to kill Abel because Abel is more favored, right? He's the shepherd, and God obviously prefers his sacrifice, because, you know, if you have two meals, are you going to choose the duck à l'orange, or are you going to choose the roasted vegetables?
Yeah, God knows, duck à l'orange.
That is correct. So he goes for the duck à l'orange. Now, the Bible makes it seem as though Cain is very petty and angry and jealous at all this attention that Abel is getting, so he brings him out of the woods and he kills him.
Now, it seems funny that you would say the words like petty, because imagine that God is real, and he hangs out every so often, voice from the clouds. Hey.
Hey, what's going on, boys?
Hey, Abel, what's up? Want to hang out? Yeah, sure. Can Cain come? No. Doesn't seem all that petty that Cain would be like, fucking Abel.
Okay, so maybe he didn't like being,
third wheel.
Third wheel, but in the Book of Jubilees, the real explanation as to why Cain is actually kills Abel is over breeding rights over their sisters. So who gets to fuck their sisters? Yeah.
Well, you got to figure that kind of thing happened a lot if everybody started out with Adam and Eve and that was it. That was always my favorite part. Adam and Eve leave the garden, have some kids, and then their kids go off and get married to people that aren't related to them. It was always like the Bible always kind of glosses over that.
Well, the Book of Jubilees is a way to not gloss over it.
And so this is where they get right into it.
They get
like,
right into it, exactly, oh, yeah. Which is why this is not a very popular book. Because who really wants to make a book about incest that popular?
Mm-hmm.
And here's what's really funny.
All the incestuous history that you wish was in the Bible.
Yeah, it's in the Book of Jubilees.
The bestseller parts.
That's correct. But it's not just that. Like I feel to some degree that every once in a while, people normally avoid the question, the uncomfortable question of who was Cain's wife. And I'm not talking from, I'm talking Sunday school teachers. Like, just go over to them and ask them who was Cain's wife. No one likes to talk about this unless you are the fundamentalist. The fundamentalists, they love talking about it. Like, I was doing some research. Remember the Answers in Genesis people? They're the ones that have that Creation Museum and Ken Ham and his whole group. They believe the earth is 6,000 years old, the Bible, every single word of it is true. Well, they will endlessly defend the incest in the Bible. Like, they're one of the few people that take a lot of pride in it. And they take so much pride, they try to even inject science into it. Like, here's what they say. Number one, they're like, well, it makes sense that Adam and Eve had kids that fucked each other because their genes were perfect, and through this sort of mongoloidedness, our genes started being corrupt. And the level of corruption, by the way, they do offer a mechanism of evolution. Sin is supposed to corrupt your genes, which just means, like, well, I could imagine a whole bunch of fucking empirical tests that we could set up to see if that's true. Who's with me here? Sin equals worse genes? My God.
It would have been popular with the Nazis, I'm sure.
No, they didn't regard what they did as sinning. I'm talking like we could just make a simple one where masturbation is sin. We could make a very easy test
of
just playing with yourself.
You've seen the 18th century drawings that they used to have.
About masturbation?
Yeah, exactly. Where there's this hilarious French picture on the internet. I don't know the Google words that you can find it, but it has this diagram, like 20 pictures of this youth, and it says the effect of masturbation on the youth. And the first picture has a young
healthy disposition.
A healthy schoolboy in the flower of his youth, and then as he continues to masturbate through the pictures, his hair is falling out and his teeth get all weird, and by the end he's just his skull is like
caved
in. He's you just don't touch yourself. That's all I could say.
Kind of like a doctor's manual too. This is not just a propaganda campaign. This is like, I'm a serious doctor, man. And if you masturbate, sir, you will waste away.
I can't even imagine living back in the day where you actually... Because, you know, we take for granted the fact that we know that there's not... masturbation is normal, everybody does it, it's all well and good. But back in the day, imagine the kind of stress that you'd be under where you think that you're mentally retarding yourself by jacking it.
And who's... And you're not going to stop doing it. You're going to just do it, right? How long have you been able to go without masturbating? Have you ever really actually tried? I tried. I actually had a contest.
Dude, I go visit my parents for like long periods of time, and usually when I get down there, I always try not to masturbate in their house for as long as I usually can. And usually after about a week, I'm like, fuck it. Get back to my three a week.
That sounds about right. Let me tell you something. I think the longest I ever went was 2 weeks. The longest. And I don't think I could get longer than that. And that was a while ago.
Was it like a crazy nut afterwards? Was it kind of like, have you ever like had to go to the bathroom so bad, and then when you go, it's like, oh, heavenly.
No, here's what it was. It actually got to the point where it was totally out of my hands altogether. You know, like the whole wet dreams that people have?
Yep.
That's what happens. Your body will excrete it. It's disgusting.
Nocturnal excretions.
Nocturnal excretions. And let me tell you something. I like my excretions to be contained, not to wake up and look like I just wet myself. And after 2 weeks, let me tell you something. You're like Peter North, all right? It's unbelievable the amount of jizz that comes out of you. You will strain your underwear at the end of that. I just don't think it's healthy to not masturbate. That's
like
what I'm saying.
A malfunctioning machine at the glazed donut factory.
Yeah, when your underwear looks like you stored a bunch of Krispy Kreme donuts in there, it's a fucking bad sign. Right. So, yeah, no, I didn't really bust that much of a nut because the nut had been busted for me. Like, and plus, by then, after 2 weeks of not masturbating, I mean, you have the most vivid sexual dreams in the world. I mean, you might as well be fucking. You're just fucking a ghost.
Interesting. That actually is kind of intriguing right there.
I think it explains maybe, okay, imagine the medieval world in which people really buy into this you can't masturbate dealio.
Yeah.
Okay? And now also imagine that you have you have a classic nightmare. Now, you know where the word nightmare comes from? Well, mare means wait. Okay? And the whole thing about nightmares is that when you wake up from sleep paralysis, I don't know if you know what that is. It's
sure.
kind of like
yeah.
a period between restfulness and sleep where you're conscious but your body can't move. And most people who are in that state will tell you that it feels as though someone's pressing on their chest or sitting on them. Okay? So, and they're also very likely to hallucinate during that time. So you are living in the medieval world. You have not masturbated in fucking forever. You suddenly wake up in this weird zone of restlessness, and you cannot move, and you feel a weight on your chest. What are the odds that you're going to say some witch was there trying to fucking seduce you after you have a giant emission of semen in your fucking trousers?
Yeah, it's not a bad guess.
Happens a lot. So that's the mare and nightmare, by the way. That's where it comes from. Pressing or weight. Hmm. So a nightmare is like supposed to be like a pressing of weight on you when you sleep. And it comes a lot, well, at least it's assumed that it comes from like this type of phenomenon that happens a lot. And I mean, when you don't have any way of understanding what the fuck is happening to you, what kind of insane conclusions you're going to come up with? I mean, people who have modern day night, like this kind of sleep paralysis, assume that they're being kidnapped by aliens. Okay? Fucking go back 600 years, someone's going to be like, my neighbor walked in and he was sat on me and his wife fucking stole my semen and then they ruined my crops. Killed them.
I always love the African people who think their penises have been stolen, even though their penises are still obviously attached to their crotch.
Yeah, but for them, it's more like the essence of your penis.
It's you like know? Your mojo, baby.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, if you don't know anything about the way the penis works, and 1 minute it's the size of a peanut, and the next minute it's the size of a healthy, girthy sausage, how are you supposed to guess where that comes from? You just probably think the penis fairy just came over and made your penis grow.
So you got to watch out for like cold snaps and cold showers and
yeah, the evil ghosts of the cold that sap your penile strength that just come over and make you look like your little baby boy when you walk out of the pool. This is why I don't swim naked, by the way. any man who skinny dips is probably one that's very comfortable with his manliness. And I don't think I have that level.
Yeah, there's too much of a swing.
You know, speaking of water, because I want to move away from the whole Cain and Abel thing, because that's more for the book. You can go to the site and you can read the whole article. I wanted to talk about, actually, something else that I've been researching. And it's ancient flood stories, or deluge stories. Because I wanted to try to find out, where does the story of Noah's Ark actually really come from? Because anyone who's actually, like, imagine you are not living in the contemporary world today, but yeah, I don't know, you're living in ancient Acadia, right? You're living 3,000 or 5,000 years ago. And it turns out that if you lived then, you would actually have a very similar story to the story of Noah's Ark. And in fact, once you actually do a little bit of historical research, you realize that Noah's Ark is just a big, giant, plagiarized scam. But that's okay, because that's what we do all the fucking time. We just take other people's stories, man.
we reboot Spider-Man for no reason, just because.
Yeah, just because Sam Raimi's not directing it, so let's reboot it. So here's where it starts. It starts actually 49 centuries ago with an epic, story of a ancient Sumerian king called Zeusudra, who has a vision one day that something horrible is going to happen, and one of the gods, because there are multiple gods, one of the gods warns him that the big kahuna, Enlil, is going to drown all of humanity. There's no real explanation as to why this happens, because it turns out that the tablet is only fragmented. So it goes from creation story of the gods building to a city, scene missing, and then the gods are displeased with humanity.
Gods always seem displeased with humanity. That's one of those things about religion that always sucks, is why can't we have a more harmonious relationship with our deities? Why can't they like us and love us and encourage us to do well? And when we do badly, you know, they could be disappointed, but not angry.
Because the gods reflect nature, and nature is a cruel bitch that's always trying to kill you.
Yeah, I guess they take most of their stories from, and then there was a fire and everyone died.
And then there was a giant flood, right? Which is what this story is about. So after receiving this vision and then scene missing, and the gods decide that human beings are too noisy. This is literally their problem, apparently. We've made a lot of noise. And we're going to be drowned. So he builds a boat. He's told to build a boat. Unfortunately, again, the dimensions, scene missing. We don't know what the dimensions were supposed to be, but it's a fairly large boat. Because he manages to have a whole bunch of goods, which once the storm subsides, he essentially gets out of his boat, sacrifices an animal, and he's given the gift of immortality. And Zeusudra comes back. Like, this is a tale that's fairly common around the Sumerian times. And the empire, like the Sumerian Empire, essentially crumbles and falls, like all empires. And the one that takes over is the Akkadian Empire. And they take the story, and now we have a new character who's essentially the same dude. This time he's called Atrahasis. And Atrahasis' story is relatively similar, and we have a few more fragments of this one, but there's lots of fucking scene missings in that one too. But generally speaking, the gods, there's like lower and higher gods. And the lower gods are really tired of doing all the manual labor on Earth. They're tired, and they're just like, they form a union. And they revolt against the upper gods, and like, we don't want to work anymore. So the upper gods are like, we will create man who will bear all of the work. He will be our work mules. So they take one god who they chop up. I guess you can't make an omelet without breaking a few eggs, right? So they chop him up, mix in some clay, and then every god spits on it. Maybe you need a little bit of water, or maybe they're just really disrespectful. Anyways.
It's probably just a cultural thing we don't get. Maybe back in the day, it's like spitting in someone's face. It's like, oh, thank you. Thank you so much for the spit.
I have so much honor. Some of it went into my nose. I'm truly blessed by your spit. But yes, they spit on it.
George Clooney, can you spit in my face? Oh, yeah.
So they spit on it, and then later man is created, scene missing. And then the gods, one of the gods, again, Enlil, which is the same one, decides that he's had it with humanity. He wants to kill us all. And then Atrahasis is told in a dream that he needs to build a giant ark, get a whole bunch of fucking people on it. Although, here's what I like about the Atrahasis tale. No one believes him that there's going to be a flood, so when he finishes to build his boat, he has a big party in there, and then he locks everyone up so they can't leave, and then the flood happens, and then finally, after about 7 days, they break out of the boat. And he releases a raven and a dove, and it's like, it's all good. And the gods are like, we won't do it again, we promise. You kind of redeemed mankind. It's all good now, we chilled out.
Did they give us the rainbow too? Like
no,
God
there's
did?
No rainbow in that version.
I always love that, the Abrahamic God. At the end of the flood story, they were like, and that's why rainbows exist, as God's promise not to murder us all.
No, theirs was sort of like, and after the covenant, this is why childbirth is painful, because you were loud and noisy and gods were very displeased by you. But they have their own little, this is why this is like this, you know?
This is why things suck.
Yeah, exactly. This is why it hurts having kids, because we were really noisy and the gods were angry at us. But we still managed to survive, despite their best efforts to kill us. Okay, so that's the Epic of Atrahasis. 500 years after that, there's another story called the Epic of Gilgamesh. You're probably more familiar with Gilgamesh. And Atrahasis reappears as a now a different character. He's a different name, but it's the same dude. It's Utnapishtim. And this guy is, like, it's kind of like as if you did a story today and you just, or a story 500 years from now and your main character was Darth Vader. You know what I mean? Like a common fictional character that you just basically say, in my story, Gilgamesh goes to meet the survivor of the flood. You know what I mean? Like, they just, that's how he appears in the story, as a guy that Gilgamesh meets, because, you know, Atrahasis is immortal. So Gilgamesh goes to Atrahasis to find out what this key to immortality is. And naturally, being a long-winded, you know, guy, he just explains to him the flood story, which I've just mentioned to you before already.
So it gets recycled back into this culture.
Exactly. So, and then that story, basically, this is the story that appears now, I think, 1,000 years later, written down in the Bible. So I think by now you're starting to get the gist of it, right? And they're not the only ones, by the way, the Jews to pilfer it. The Greeks pilfered the story as well, except for they don't include any animals, but they do include a guy building a box to avoid, or actually Prometheus' son, to build a box to avoid being drowned, and him and his wife become the progenitors of everybody. We seem to have like this obsession with bottlenecking our species into mongoloidism, but whatever, you know, it's, they're fucking stories. What are you going to do? But once, I think the biggest tragedy I've found in the, during my research, though, is the scene missings. You know what I mean? Like where you're reading some of the earliest tales we've ever read, and you're just, 90% of this is gone. I don't know what happened. You're just like, scene missing, scene missing, scene missing, and then Gilgamesh went here, scene missing, scene missing.
Well, it's really impressive, the fact that we have as much as we do. It's like those morons that talk about, oh, there's gaps in the fossil records. You know what? There might be small gaps, but overall, through the millions of years, we found a shitload of fossils, and they've told us so much.
It's like, it is pretty impressive what we do have, although it does open your eyes when you realize that translations of it that we could actually read, say for the Epic of Atrahasis, or even the one I was telling you about before with the story of Zeusudra, they don't get translated until the late 19th century. So not really even fully understood or even remembered for most of our history as modern Western civilization. So these are only now being reintroduced and re-understood, in, relatively speaking.
Isn't it funny how stuff like that gets left for so long? It's kind of like, remember how they suddenly discover that there were bodies attached to the heads on the Easter Island statues?
Oh, God, it's so
and
hilarious.
You're like, did nobody
why didn't you
to
dig?
Look?
Did you not dig a little bit? Like, what happened? No one dug. And you know what? I guess it's always that problem where in hindsight it seems silly, but you're saying to yourself, in a place where there are no trees, could there have been landslides that bury shit? I mean, I'm just going to put it out there. I didn't know anything about the Easter Islands, but maybe I would have asked myself the question of, what's underneath these things? It just seems silly. It just seems so silly.
Well, just as silly as, you know, oh, you know, some ancient tablets, whatever. Who needs to translate them? They're pretty. Put them in a museum.
Well, a lot of the things where I was telling you about before, the Book of Maccabees or much of the Apocrypha, gets discovered still, again, relatively recently with the Dead Sea Scrolls. You know, so much of what we know is actually fragmented pieces that we've only now put back together, and there's so many questions that, like, we don't understand or know the lines of ancient kings of early civilizations. We don't know these things. Like, as far as we know, the legends say, like, for instance, that Zeusudra ruled for 126 years. Does that sound likely to you?
No.
No. No. Or Gilgamesh ruling for hundreds of years? No.
Not with that diet. Or with their level of healthcare, I think not.
Not with that ancient HMO. You you couldn't rule more than 40 years if you're lucky, if you started at the age of 9.
Your health insurance was you prayed to God, and man, they're even bigger dicks than the existing insurance companies. They reject everything. No, 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 no.
They are jerks. But yes, that's the subsidiary research that I've been doing for the book. I find it interesting. Once you actually uncover these ancient sources, you realize that there's nothing new in the world. You know, like I still find it funny that we have this idea that people create new, you know, inventions or stories. No, we don't. We just rip off old ones, give it a new little twist, and then ta-da, it's a new story.
Well, I could bitch on for hours and hours about that in the context of copyright and how basically big companies now are locking up our culture. It's like Walt Disney. there's a guy that took every single famous public domain story and basically locked it up and took it away from us. And then changed the laws so that Mickey Mouse could be continued to be protected and keeping that from going out into the public. It's really amazing.
But he's not the first to do that. And if you look at the history of copyright, you realize that for the most part, the beginnings of copyright was in order for the government of England to essentially squash religious pamphlets that were being printed and distributed by people. They created writing guilds or printing guilds in order to make sure that people weren't just publishing religious materials that might undermine the fucking Church of England.
Yeah, I saw something where back in the day, if you had one of these printing presses, you basically had to print something out, give it to the government, and they'd register it so that they'd be able to take basically a pamphlet and match it up and find out which printing press it came off of.
Yeah, so it's nothing new. All I'm saying is in today's society, they're trying harder to do something about it. But, I mean, it wasn't uncommon for people to be jailed all the time or whipped or even fucking mutilated for, copyright violations. So it's normally not been on the very positive end of history for the most part. But that's an entirely different show. I don't think that'll be a Good Atheist show. One day I'll do a completely non-Good Atheist show specifically about the history of copyright. But that's going to be after. That's not going to be for a while. I told you guys, I'm focused 100% fucking on the book these days, which is why, again, I wanted to mention, if you are really interested, start going to the site a little bit more, log in, and you're going to see about twice a week I'm going to be posting up special articles about stuff I'm researching for Bible Stories. I think it'll give you guys a really good idea of where I'm going with it, too, and just some of the awesome side materials that I come across. And I think even when the book gets published, I'll be able to refer to these materials for you to just check out in the future as well. So it's more about the writing now these days. A little bit less podcasting. We're still sticking to about one a week up until, like I said before, until December 1st, 2012, which is when I want to release the book. And if I could succeed at that, then we won't have to fucking call it quits, folks. We will not have to call it quits if you guys just buy the book. There's hope at the light of there's light at the end of the tunnel, guys.
Well, there's been a lot of atheists over the years have supported us, so hopefully we can count on people to support us a little bit more.
Well, it's all about the numbers, you know. I definitely know that there's lots of people that would, but we have to reach those numbers. Otherwise, I'm just going to be.
Are you going to put up a little thermometer on your website?
I don't know if I'm going to do that, though. That seems kind of cheesy.
I don't know. It's not a bad. Because here's the whole thing. I mean, if you just throw your pre-sale buy at the wall and you don't know what's going on and everything like that. I mean, if you're going to be putting out a plea like this, people want to know how things are going. So in that way,
fair. I'll put a little bar. I'll show what the goal is, how we need to get there, and hopefully people will try to reach that bar.
You just have to worry that it's going to be so bad it's embarrassing. That's always been my fear. That's why I always lean.
Thank you, Ryan.
I'm just telling you, it's why I always lean towards secrecy whenever I do anything, because sometimes you're like, hey, everybody, submit your idea for this, and then you get like one submission, and you're like, we got tons of submissions. But this one guy here, his was the best, so he wins.
Well, actually, it reminds me a little while ago because before the show that I announced that I was going to basically stop doing Good Atheist, there's this one person who commented saying, the last show you were talking about being so positive and, you know, that things were going to go well. And I wanted to say at the time that, yeah, you don't have a choice. You can't start a show and be like, help, I'm going to die of starvation, everybody. Blah. Because then you look like a loser, and no one wants to support a loser. It's weird that way. You have to kind of maintain the illusion of success, but also make people understand that you're not successful. How do you do that? It's paradoxical.
The illusion of success is being stripped away, my good man.
It definitely
you have pulled back the curtain and you're showing everybody.
Showing the wizard.
Yeah.
I've shown him my wizard. Okay, well, you know what? I think we'll tie up the show with that. I'd just like to remind everybody that we're doing this on a weekly basis. I'm going to be trying to be putting up the shows on Tuesdays, regularly on Tuesdays, because I think that was the best day of the week. Like, the most likely to get downloaded was always Tuesdays. I guess that's the day that, you know, Mondays are no good because everybody's in a zombie mode on Mondays. Tuesdays just sort of like maybe helps you get over the rest of the week when you listen to a good show. So that's what we're going to do. One show a week. And with that, my name is Jacob Fortan.
And I'm Ryan Harkness.
Have a good Atheist Day, everybody.